Hello, guys. Welcome back to the Broly Talks Hockey Podcast. And in today's episode, I'm joined by Garrett Hall, and he is the founder of Hockey Graphs and Hockey Data Inc. And he's very active on Jets Twitter. And that's one of the ways that I first interacted with Garrett was through Jets Twitter and just seeing his comments and all his insights. So, Garrett, how are you doing today?
I'm doing excellent. Thanks for having me.
All right. Awesome. Very lucky to have you on. And I just want to start off with what got you into hockey as the introductory question.
Yeah. The long story short is that I was taking school out here in Vancouver at UBC around the same time as the Winnipeg Jets came back. And I was a fan of the Winnipeg Jets growing up because I'm born in Winnipeg, but left there in the mid-90s. And yeah, when the team came back, I was like, oh, I'm kind of interested. And so I Googled just to find out a little bit about the Atlanta Thrashers, because while I was still a fan of hockey, I wasn't quite the same level. And there's no, especially because, you know, internet wasn't quite the same in 2011 as it is now. While there still was lots of information, I didn't know anything without looking for it first. And I just so happened to stumble my way to a website that now is called Arctic Ice Hockey, but at one point was called Behind the Net. It was run by another Winnipeg expat. His name is Gabriel Desjardins, but he was known back then as Howardchuk, as his online pseudonym. Mm-hmm. And Behind the Net was the very first website where you could actually go online and see different players' Corsi and like other little stats like that. So he was like the first guy to build a publicly accessible database where people can look things up with some pretty high-end user-friendly utility, as opposed to there was like one website beforehand called Time on Ice and Nice Time on Ice, but those were very technical based, unless you knew what you're doing. That was run by Tim Barnes, who now is one of the lead guys over at the Washington Capitals.
And did you ever play hockey growing up?
I did. I played all the way from when I was four until I graduated high school. Best I ever did was being a late cut for Junior B and a couple call-up games, but so wasn't very good, but I still played.
And that was in Winnipeg at the time?
I played my first third of my career, would definitely be the wrong word, my first duration in Winnipeg, and then the later two-thirds were on the island, Vancouver Island, which is off the west coast, just off of Vancouver.
Okay, I see. And what, like, specifically got you into analytics? Like, you've been a fan of hockey, and you talked about going on to Arctic Ice, but was there anything about, like, you as a kid where you were very, like, statistical, or, like, you very, like, much enjoyed stuff like that, or how did you kind of get into that?
Well, the schooling that I was taking was very analytical based. I was focusing in analytical chemistry and bioinformatics, which is like basically doing the computer work for biologists and chemists. So like you know less about stats than a statistician and less about biology and chemistry than a biologist or chemist, but you know more about biology and chemistry than a statistician and more about stats than a chemists or biologists. That's kind of how I got my I was doing that at the same time. So when I found this stuff by Gabe, I thought it was really interesting and kind of delved into it. And I enjoyed arguing on the internet because I like being right, even though I'm not always right. So analytics helps me be wrong a little bit less.
Right. And what do analytics bring to the table that other measures of evaluation don't, like, in your own opinion? Like, when I say analytics, I'm talking more like more things like not traditional statistics.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I will say is it kind of depends, because analytics, in the way that I view analytics, is advanced statistics are different than analytics. Analytics is an actual process in terms of using computers to try to determine the value of statistics, or even like non-statistical stuff, such as like, you know, qualitative information, whether that's scouting or
right
or all that kind of stuff. So I mean, like, in a perfect world, analytics provides you information that's not just an addition to what you already have available with other means like scouting, but on top of it, you're hoping that that's without bias. Now, of course, bias always exists. We're not in a perfect world, whether, like, you know, if you're someone creating a model, the bias exists in how you create the model. Bias exists with like people tracking the data. You know, that's one of the big things, is the fact that it's more information, and the more information you get, the likely you make a more informed decision and hopefully less wrong from that decision. And then on top of it, the nice thing about analytics is it also creates scale, and it creates opportunity to like test things. So, you know, like, you can look at different things like tendencies in the NHL. Like, one of the first statistics that people looked at was PDO, which was named after literally, it was just someone in the comment section of, I believe, Tim Barnes, but it could have been Gabe Desjardins article, where someone was like, essentially said something along the lines of, hey, I noticed that like people tend to overpay for players when they have high amounts of shooting percentage and save percentage, and they tend to buy out players when they have low shooting percentage and save percentage while they're on the ice. And that's how the PDO stat came in. So it's just kind of like the nice thing to kind of look at, like, not just in terms of evaluating players, but also kind of look at decisions that are being made by coaches and players and GMs, and kind of like look at them and see, you know, what are the tendencies and what do they mean.
All right, makes sense there. And on places like Twitter, there's all these different groups. Like, there's a lot of people who would call themselves the analytics community or stuff like that. I'm sure you've heard that term.
Mm-hmm.
And what would be your favorite part of a group like that, and your least favorite part?
It's nice to find other people who share similar feelings and beliefs as you, to not be just like yelling in the void about whether or not a player should be played more or less. So that's fun. There's a lot of like companionship. I have now some actual real life friends that live in Vancouver that I actually initially founded through Twitter and the Hockey Stats blogosphere. So that's quite nice. And in terms of the least favorite part, I think it's probably pretty obvious that, like, you know, like, there can be a bit of an echo chamber when everyone has similar beliefs and similar values onto things. But on top of that, a long time ago, I wrote an article on hockey graphs. It was like a two-part process where it was like why are analytics types sometimes assholes and it's justifiable, and the second part was why is it sometimes unjustifiable. And I think the second part pretty much sums up a lot of my least favorite stuff of the hockey analytics community.
Right. And you've been a big part in founding Hockey Graphs and Hockey Data Inc. And how did those groups come to form, and how did you have those ideas to start those?
Yeah. So Hockey Graphs came about because I was originally writing on Arctic ice hockey. And then I got poached to become the manager of Jets Nations by Thomas Drance. And when I was being the manager of Jets Nations, sometimes I wanted to write about things that weren't Jets specific. And so I just one day in the middle of the night tweeted out, hey, would anyone be interested if I just started a blog to write about things that weren't centered on the Jets? And then I had two people who said, hey, I would love to be to get in on that. That was Benjamin Wendorf, who also used to write at and used to manage Arctic Ice Hockey. And he goes by the pseudonym Garrick, who wrote both at Fangraphs and a couple other places. And so, yeah, we founded Hockeygraphs, slightly named after the baseball website Fangraphs, and just kind of grew from there. In terms of the hockey data, like I said, I like to argue on the internet a lot, and eventually made a name for myself, which had a sports agency called CKM Sports. They found me and asked me to work for them. So I was doing analytics for their players, to using these analytics to help let players know their strengths and weaknesses and how to become better players, and use that in conjunction with developmental coaches. And okay. I did one for a CIS hockey player from St. Mary's University, and the coach was like, I really like this. I would love to have this for my whole team. And of course, because we were a player agency, that was a conflict of interest. We couldn't do that for people who are not part of the player agency. So we ended up, some of us leaving and starting Hockey Data with some connections that I built from that.
Oh, I see. That makes a lot of sense. And are those things you're still working to this day? I saw you recently published a Hockey Graphs article. And are you still a big part of Hockey Data as well?
So I wouldn't say I've left Hockey Data, but I'm not really that involved with them anymore. Mm. Yeah, so that's in part why I'm writing at Hockey Graphs again, is now that I don't want to say freed from my shackles, because that's not at all what it was, but I'm now able to be a little bit more public. I mean, across the lines in terms of how private I'm supposed to be anyways, quite a few times, just because it's hard for me to be quiet on the internet, but yeah.
And what has been your favorite part about the experience at Hockey Data and Hockey Graphs?
I mean, a lot of the people that I've met, it's been fun. I mean, going viral, meeting people, and like, it's been fun. I mean, when Bob McKenzie got the Order of Canada award, and he was thanking people on Twitter, and he said, take a look or keep an eye out on these three people. And I was one of the three people listed. That was kind of cool. He turned out to be right about two of them and wrong about me, but because the other two were Thomas Durant and Craig Wyszynski. But that's been fun. I got to meet a lot of people. I think it's been cool to meet GMs and player ops type people. Definitely. I mean, it was kind of surreal after a couple of beers being sitting down with an ex NHL player who didn't have as large of a resume as other NHL players. He only got two seasons in the show, but like to actually go over his stats and like go over a couple of games that like were games that he really remembered, and he's like, oh yeah, that's crazy, and like kind of doing that kind of stuff was kind of neat. That was fun. But yeah, it's just the people.
Makes sense. And where are some places you've got to go from that experiences that you didn't really think was, I don't want to say impossible, but you didn't expect it to happen?
I mean, I got to travel. There was like one time with Hockey Data where we were like, generally speaking with Hockey Data and Hockey Graphs, most of the stuff is online. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of like video meetings and that kind of stuff. You're not actually going anywhere, but there was one time where we actually did go to present. We went all the way to New York to present with to a company that had a lot of former NHLers as part of an investment deal. So it was kind of fun checking out New York and the countryside, like in the Connecticut area, over that time period.
And if you could say one thing to 12-year-old you, what would you say?
Huh. I mean, it's tough to say that kind of things because, like, you know, then you look into the butterfly effect, and you know, if you improve one thing, maybe you change all your experiences, and you don't get to experience what you did that led up to this point. And so, who really knows? But I mean, I was definitely one of those kids in school that didn't really put in the effort that they could have or should have. So I might slap myself a little silly for that, but otherwise, I don't think I would change too much because it's all led me to here.
All right, that's a pretty good answer. I like that. And moving on now to some more Jets focused here. Talking about moves that the Jets have made in recent memory, like past 2-3 seasons. What's a trade or a signing or keeping someone that they shouldn't that you have really agreed with, or no, really disagreed with, sorry, in the past couple seasons?
Okay. I thought you were starting off with agreed with, and I was like, oh, that's a good question. Cause like you almost always get asked a disagreement. and I mean, like like this is a bit of a tangent, but you know, like people always are like, oh, Garrett, you must like hate teams because you're always pointing out like the stupid stuff that they're doing, and you probably think that you're better than them and so much smarter than them, and they do so much wrong because you're always pointing out the things they do wrong. And I'm like 80-90% of the time, like you agree, like it's like, or you might disagree, but you like agree most for the most part, or like you understand what brought them to that point, because, and it's just like a slight difference in like how you'd go about it. Because I mean, one, you know, writing about that kind of stuff and tweeting about that stuff isn't as fun, but it's also not as educational for, and it's, you know, it doesn't really have the same kind of weight, just because being like, oh yeah, team did such and such and that works, you know, right. Most of the time that doesn't really break down like the value in things is understanding potential mistakes or potential areas of inefficiencies that can be exploited and improved upon. It's always interesting to look like that. Like I remember, and I'm sorry, I'm really going on tangent here. But,
no, that's all good. Like, I love to hear this.
You always get on Twitter, like people are like, oh, you think you're smarter than the team because you disagree with some move that they made. And it's like, you think you're smarter because, and don't have any of the experience or whatever. And it's like, I remember where I was talking to one NHL team director of player development. And we were kind of talking about that because usually when we were doing hockey data calls, I would be like, oh yeah, kind of introduce myself. And more often than not, but not always, they're like, oh yeah, I kind of know who you are. I follow you on some burner account on Twitter. I'm like, oh, okay. but like, I was like, sorry if I'm like making fun of some of the moves that you make or whatever, or if I've gone against you. And I remember this one guy said, for this NHL team, he said, honestly, if an NHL war room got rid of people who had disagreements with some of the major moves that were being made, you'd have an empty war room. Like everyone like has their own opinions and agreements and disagreements over time. So that's one thing. But in terms of like moves that I've agreed with and disagreed with, it's hard to pinpoint that kind of stuff just because, these things never happen in a vacuum. And like just to give an example, last trade deadline, the Winnipeg Jets traded away Andrew Kopp, and they traded for Sanford. And I thought that was kind of weird because it was kind of like trying to do two different things, both like a selling and a buying at the same time, which, you know, selling a rental and buying a rental. Going back to your comment about moves that I agree with and disagree with, it's always hard to pinpoint everything exactly because my agreement and disagreements all kind of are situated within the context of the greater direction. which might also change depending on goals and stuff like that. Like, I think a big goal for the Winnipeg Jets is the fact that they want to make the playoffs in terms to make playoff revenue and to make their team look successful in the long run, which will help them garner free agents and such like that, just because they are a team. They're in a geographic location that, you know, not everyone wants to go to. So they right. feel that that's one way to make themselves more appealing while also being successful as a franchise. But at the same time, like, you know, my personal bias and in my opinion is that the goal should be a cup, which, you know, like a team that's trying to win the cup versus a team that's trying to be in the playoffs quite often, it's not quite the same. And like, you can look at how the Winnipeg Jets made decisions last deadline. They both sold Andrew Kopp and they bought Sanford, and that's kind of trying, like, in some ways, like, I'm saying, like, you're trying to both buy and sell, but like, that's them trying to maximize their assets value while still trying to make the playoffs. You know, I look at it as, you know, you're extremely unlikely to make the playoffs, and if you do, you're probably just going to get eliminated in the first round anyways. While they look at it as, like, you know, even if they get into the playoffs for four games, that's two games worth of home playoff revenue, which is a big deal when you're not paying salaries in the playoffs. Right. So, you know, there's differences in opinions, and like, I think on Twitter I make it quite obvious of when I agree with a decision and when I don't agree with a decision, but a lot of that comes with the context of, you know, what's the end goal there.
Right. Yeah. Like what you're saying there, like, just trying to get two things done at the same time, like, it would have made more sense if they just didn't go for the Sanford trade there and just
keep
their assets there.
Yeah, I don't really understand that move. Like, I get that. Like, for example, they made a similar move with a trade with the same team when they went for Dylan DeMello and they traded for him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they ended up signing him and extending him, and so, and he was a pretty good player. So all of a sudden they got like something that's more long-term, but like sooner than what those draft assets would have gotten them, which is like worth it. And like, I get that, you know, they're hoping to do the same thing with Sanford, but I didn't view that as like the type of player, because like, you know, trading, you know, I personally believe that the Jets were in a position where they should have been more sellers than they were buyers, instead of trying to do a little bit of both on the deadline. But at the same time, you know, let's say Sanford was a player who was like a little bit undervalued and was someone that they were able to convince once it came in to sign in the long run, well, you know, drafting or sending out these third and fifth round draft picks that, like, you know, only 10% of the time become an actual NHL player, well, you're getting more value from them than you would have.
Right.
Because like, you know, there's that, what's kind of value that you're going to get from them, but also like a timeline aspect, because, you know, the Winnipeg Jets, they only have so long of competition window with, you know, Connor Hellebuyck, Mark Scheifele, and Pierre-Luc Dubois only having really two years pretty much under contract or RFA status.
And going on with that, it seems like lately the Jets have been having a lot of success at the draft. Like, it seems like Chevy just seems to make the right pick at times. And would you say it just makes more sense for the Jets to hold on to more draft picks just for that reason alone? Like, their scouting staffs, like, they definitely know what they're doing and they have been doing a pretty good job lately.
Yeah. I mean, there's two different types of wavelengths you can go along that. It's like, oh, you're you're able to get more with less, so maybe you can get away with having less. But at the same time, it's like, well, if you're able to do better, you can keep that advantage and just like run with it. That said, I think the Jets draft might be a little overvalued by people just because they had some success with some first rounders who were not early first rounders, but still first rounders. And Connor Hellebuyck, they have kind of struggled outside of the first round, which might not lead them to like long-term success. And especially because they recently lost Max Geis, who was their head U.S. Amateur scout. He, I believe Elliot Friedman said he was going to a player agency. I can't remember. I think it was CAA. And I it's always hard to tell because like just because someone's drafted from someone's territory doesn't necessarily mean that's the scout that was really gunning for them. But most of the Winnipeg Jets' success outside of the first round, and even a good chunk of success drafting within the first round, has been U.S. based players. Like if you look outside the first round, the people that have made the NHL are Tucker Pullman, an overaged U.S. player, or he was drafted as a overage U.S. player. Andrew Kopp, he was drafted as an overage U.S. player. Connor Hellebuyck, he was drafted as an overage U.S. player. You might notice a pattern here. Mason Appleton, he was drafted as an overage U.S. player. So, there's definitely an aspect that I wonder if they're having so much success in US and then they lose their head US guy, whether or not that success is going to continue.
And with the recent hiring of Bonus, like what is your opinion on that hiring and also bringing in Arneal? And it seems like the Jets want to eventually give Arneal that role as head coach.
Well, they definitely, gunned real hard for Trotz and that didn't work out because like the Jets knew that, like, good for them on knowing exactly what the team needed, and that's a team that has a whole bunch of really good players playing very poorly defensively. I think I looked at it and five of the Jets' top six forwards were all guys in the bottom 10 percentile or something like that in terms of defensive impact. Actually, no, I think in the bottom quarter, Connor, Wheeler, and Scheifele were all in the bottom 5%. And then like Ehlers and PLD were both somewhere sub 25.
Right.
And that's not a thing for long-term success. And also their penalty kill has essentially been the worst in the NHL since the teams moved to the Winnipeg. So I think looking for guys with experience that have a history of doing very well defensively is maybe not the move with the most amount of upside, but it's definitely the move to, you know, try to fix where you're most damaged.
And looking at Bonus's track record, he like elevated a guy like Hintz, and would you say that there's a good chance that we could see Ehlers really thrive under Bonus's system just because of examples of players who've thrived in Dallas who kind of can't play the game similarly to the way Ehlers does?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible, and I think that would help Winnipeg a lot because they have struggled in part because of the fact that a lot of the prime offensive opportunities they've given to Wheeler rather than Ehlers, which, you know, at first made sense because Wheeler was the better player of the two, but that's no longer the case. For the past three seasons, Ehlers has arguably been the Jets' best forward, but he sits usually around fourth or fifth in total ice time, that's not a recipe for success, or at least optimizing success. Maybe you can do that. You look at how Bonus did in Dallas. He ran one line that was kind of loaded offensively, and then the rest of the lines he almost treated like checking lines. I don't think a system like that would generally work well with the Jets. But does that mean that Bonus is going to do that with the Jets? Because, I mean, a lot of the things that coaches do has to do with what they think is best for that particular team. So some of those tendencies might not persist in Winnipeg as it did with Dallas, but we'll see.
All right. And I've got one last question for you before I let you go. How much rope does Chevy have before True North says that it's time to move on?
Well, I mean, True North has always tried to sell loyalty as one of their big things. You look at what I said earlier about like it not being necessarily a prime place for free agents, for hockey executives, etc., to want to go to. It's usually not on the top of the list. So they tried to, you know, make up for it elsewhere. And one of those areas is loyalty. So, you know, I think Chevy has a lot of rope because of that. But then again, he's also on his third coach and four, if you count interim coaches. And, you know, how many GMs last? Many, many coaches, not many. So
right.
I think he has more rope than most GMs would have in that type of situation, but I think there are some limits. Mm-hmm. There's also the Twitter conspiracy that the Jets might have a very involved ownership with Mark Chipman. Who knows if that's true? I actually don't have no idea about that, right. But that might also play a role in things as well.
Right. All right. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me, and it was really insightful, and I just want to say thank you. And where can people find you who are looking for more of your content and ideas?
Yeah, so on Twitter I tweet way too much, and then Hockey Graphs, I have started writing again. I just wrote, as you mentioned, an article recently about draft analytics and the pros and cons behind them, and also the pros and cons with traditional scouting. And I have an article that's hopefully coming out tomorrow, maybe not tomorrow, just because then I'm fighting against free agency about player development. And that was supposed to come out 3 to 4 days ago, but I have two kids, so busy. And then I don't know for certain. I do want to write about Jets again. But again, time-wise, and trying to find a place where I can write, where I can be free to write what I want, but with a timeline of what I can get with, again, having two little ones.
Right. All right. Well, thank you, and enjoy the rest of your week.
Thank you. You as well. Thanks for having me on.